Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Ted Maxwell, and I want to thank Ben Bueller Garcia for sitting in for me last week, doing another outstanding job in my absence. I really appreciate having Matt Neely and Ben Bueller Garcia to rely on as my stand-ins. And if you love listening to them, well, I'm sorry, you're going to be stuck with me for at least a couple more weeks, probably through the rest of the summer. I think you've got me. My time of traveling around the country is for the summer is over, and I guess around the world, if you throw in a trip to Europe. So it's been a great time, and it's been a great experience, but I'm glad to be here with you on The Morning Voice. The Morning Voice, 5 days a week, five different hosts, five different topics, and five different choices of folks for you to listen to during your drive time. As always, I've got Matt Neely behind the glass, keeping me on time, on target. And Matt, I'll tell you, it was this last trip I went up to see the grandkids up in Washington area. My daughter and her husband live just north of Seattle, in Linwood, up in Edmonds area. It was kind of a workcation for Katie and I. We went up and stayed with them a day, and then we headed up to Birch Bay.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've ever heard of Birch Bay.
I hadn't until today, no.
No, Birch Bay's up by a town called Blaine, which I'm surprised was a little bigger than I would have thought it was. And there's actually a couple...
Immortalized in Waiting for Guffman, but that was Blaine, Missouri. But that's another story.
Hey, it is, but it'd be good. But it was a great experience. It was a very small, quiet town, to say the least. And we worked 3 days, and then we brought our granddaughter up with us for the last couple days and had time with just her. And the weather was intermittent. It was everything from warm and hot to overcast and cold with some winds, but it was right there on the bay of the San Luis Islands and all that's up there. You could take a ferry over Victoria if you wanted to, but we just stayed on the beach and just hung out. We found a little brewery, Beach Cat Brewery, right
nice.
Next to the place we were staying, and it was real nice. Only had about three restaurants, and the amazing thing is it's such a small town. Do you know how many of those restaurants serve breakfast? None.
Okay.
If you weren't there on Saturday and Sunday, you had to work for breakfast. There was a little coffee shop that had three items.
Okay.
And if you didn't like avocado toast or bagel breakfast, it was,
probably salmon for the Asian population.
There was plenty of avocado toast to be found up there. But we found some amazing things. But I'll tell you what I wanted to bring back and share was the prices were just totally out of the world. They were high.
What's the minimum wage over there, Ted? Did you have
that's
notice?
That's something I did not take a look into. You think with the political mind, I would have thought about that to take a look. I'm 90% sure that's one of the things that always goes on, especially in the Seattle area. But Birch Bay is a little farther off the road. It's about 90 minutes north of Edmonds, so about 2 hours from Seattle. It's about 30 minutes from Canada. We actually, during the drive up there, Katie and I looked at each other and said, we didn't bring our passports. What were we thinking? Because we could have easily just done a trip across the border. But I did notice on the way up that the wait times at the border were about 20 to 30 minutes to enter Canada. So
okay,
maybe it was a good thing we forgot our passports.
20 to 30, that's not unduly.
No, it would have been brutal. But the area was gorgeous. It was relaxing. It was enjoyable.
It was not 110 degrees, I'm hoping.
It was not 110 degrees. Now, as always, we missed the first big monsoon of the year.
Yeah. Boy, we got 1.7 inches at our house. And I mean, there were, it varied around the area, but they were, it was a soaker because it just rained and rained and rained. It started around, a little before bedtime, I suppose. And then it just rained all night and through the morning. It was crazy.
That is, and we got a call from a renter of ours, and they said, "Hey, water's leaking."
Really? Yeah.
But this is the time of the year.
Roofer's paradise.
And you always hear it from all the folks in the HVAC industry, from the roofing industry. Get your inspections done early because when they break or you've got leaks, everybody's going to be calling for break and leaks.
Right.
So it sounds like we missed a good one. I was glad to see some rain yesterday, and that seemed pretty hard at times. I know the airport only got like 0.12, whereas you came further into the city and it was over 0.2 inches again. It's you know, it's monsoon season.
Rained off and on for a little bit, but it was pretty gentle, I thought, you know, where in our parts. So, yeah, I mean, it just depends on where you're at, right?
How'd the station do with the big monsoon last week?
I believe everything was fine here because they've done a lot of work on the roof over the last year or two. So I believe, as far as I know, everything was good.
Yeah, well, that's good because if you weren't coming in the morning and scrambling to put everything together and make sure they were able to get it, it's always good that the investments being made in Bustos Media, you know, 1030 The Voice, the trusted local news and talk station.
They were chasing a leak for a while, and I think they finally got the last of them. It took the Columbo of roof repair people to finally track that one down, but I think they got them all.
Well, that's good because you don't want to find those out the hard way. So if you
water and radio equipment, not a really good mix.
Nope. Well, hey, we've got a great show for everybody this morning. I hope you stay with us throughout the drive time. I'll be coming back after the break with Francisco Alguin Hernandez. You'd met him earlier probably on the radio when he's an intern here or with us at the Southern Arizona Leadership Council this summer. And I wanted to get him on as he's about to wrap up his internship. And there's a lot I think he can share with you about being a motivated youth in this community, looking for opportunities to improve your life and opportunities. After that, we'll have Jaime Molera with Molera Alvarez. He's going to come on and we're going to talk a little bit about his final thoughts on the legislative session, but more importantly, with an upcoming USMCA forum that will be held here in Tucson in September. And the work that's being done with that was a breakthrough. The USMCA, U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement was a breakthrough during the first Trump administration, probably one of the better trade agreements that have been made in this country, and now it's at a point of its five-year review. So a lot's going on with that. And then at 8 o'clock, we'll bring on Jay Tolkoff. He is a candidate for Ward 6 that you may not have heard about yet. That's because he's going to be in the general. He's a Republican candidate, but this is a time to introduce our listeners to him. We had Leighton Rockefeller Jr. on, a Democratic candidate in Ward 6.
Great conversation.
Yeah, he's the choice there in Ward 6. And hopefully the voter turnout at the primaries will support that. But if not, even though it's a general citywide system that a lot of us don't love, it's important to know the candidates. And more importantly, if you live in the city of Tucson, it's important to vote. So we've got all that coming to talk to you about when we come back. You are listening to The Morning Voice and on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. That's Matt.
You remember they used that song on, don't you?
No.
Do you? You grew up in Southern California.
I did.
You remember the Super Shops commercials?
I don't.
That was the music
when I grew up, it was all about Alpha Beta and Ralph's. Those were the two. Those were the two stores.
That's true.
So that
Super Shops like a hot rod shop.
Oh, no, I did. My car
late 70s, fantasies early
80s. was in the 70s. I had my first car was a 67 Mustang. My second car was a 60s Mustang convertible, which I sold then because I was a young, naive college student thinking I wanted something newer and fancier. Why would you ever get rid of a 67 convertible Mustang? And, you know, now I'm driving another convertible Mustang. Mustangs have always been it. So I guess I didn't listen to the hot rod stuff. You know, but there was a lot of hot rod going on. Cruising down on Whittier Boulevard. So I just wanted to, Matt, as I got a text message from a listener, statewide minimum wage, throughout the state of Washington is $16.66.
666. That's interesting.
That's an increase from 1628 and 24. So now it's 1666.
Well, there you go.
Blaine, Washington and in, Birch Bay, therefore, also it was the statewide throughout the state. And you think about 1666 is pretty high relative to Tucson, to Arizona, and Tucson even, where we think we've got a high sales tax. A high minimum wage. But that's part of what's driving the prices. The other thing, an article I didn't get to was this morning. I woke up and got to read that beef prices have soared and are likely to stay high. Talks about the lack of cattle we've got in this country as well, but also how much we rely upon imported beef, which I didn't realize lots of time.
And there's a health problem. It's working its way up through South America, and I think gone through Mexico, and it's working its way north, and I think that's why they're pumping the brakes on imports. I think that's driving that.
Absolutely, and so if you're going to be barbecuing this summer, be ready. your steaks and your burgers are going to cost you a little bit more. But we'll get back to that. Right now, I'm bringing on with me Francisco Holguin Hernandez. Good morning, Francisco. How are you doing?
Doing great, Ted.
Good.
How are you?
I'm doing good. So you know, Francisco is a incoming senior or a rising junior, however you want to term it, at Flowing Wells High School. He's also a student at the Pima JTED at the Bridges, used in the business startup and entrepreneurship program. And he was a graduate, and this is what I want to, we'll talk about a little bit more, of a program that's offered by Greater Tucson Leadership called the Tucson Youth Leadership Academy in 2023. So what I want to do, Francisco, is for being your age, a junior, mm-hmm. looks like you've been getting engaged, getting involved.
Been trying to, yeah.
Throughout your entire high school career, maybe even earlier than that. Why don't you just give the listeners just a little background about who you are and, you know, growing up in Tucson school, how you started getting more and more involved, and what you're hoping to do in the future real quick.
Yeah, so I think, as you were saying, I think the biggest influence that has had on me is being a student at Flowing Wells. So it really all started with that program that you were mentioning, the Tucson Youth Leadership Academy. That was my first exposure to the leadership world as well as other young people around me. And surprisingly, the director of that program took notice in me and he was like, hey, I want you to come speak at this event. And I was like, okay. So I went. It went pretty well. And now I've been here outreaching to various businesses and trying to participate in wherever I can. Some things about me, brought a little list with me. I went into Washington, D.C. not too long ago, this past April, to advocate for immigrants and DACA recipients. And then I've also spoken in front of 500 people, so wonderful.
Yeah, you've done a lot, so you're kind of underplaying, you know, what you've done. First off, Flowing Wells High School. Great school and a great school system. And I think a lot of times we miss the opportunities of some of the other, you know, what's happening in other districts. Obviously every district's different, but that Flowing Wells area tends to be a migratory area. A lot of people come and move in and out of the district, but the schools, Flowing Wells High School has always had a great reputation. It sounds like you're enjoying your time there and you feel like you're getting a good, solid education.
Yeah, I really do. I believe in the teachers so much. Every single student that has gone to Flowing Wells, I've not heard one bad thing about a teacher. There may be teachers that are worse than others, but there is no bad teacher at Flowing Wells. I truly believe that in all my hearts of hearts.
Well, that's good to hear. And anybody that's moving to Tucson might consider that, because the schools and education systems obviously make a big difference. So let's go back and talk a little bit about the Tucson Youth Academy program. So I did not know all that much about it until I met you. And I met you when you were speaking at the GTL Impact Awards. Oh, actually, I met you a year prior to that when you were a graduate of the program. But then you came up and introduced yourself again and reminded me. And then the next thing I knew, you were on stage. The next thing I knew, you were hitting a home run of a speech and presentation. I think really everybody was set back, not only by what you said, but by the way you were able to state it. You know, you were very composed, you were very professional, you spoke with passion. But this program that you said that kind of started, it was this Tucson Youth Leadership Academy. I've done a little bit of research, but I want to hear it from your point of view. What were the parts of the program? And it's held by GTL, and as I understand it, everybody in your class was from Flowing Wells High School. Is that true?
Yes.
So they go around through schools. I think they've hit about 8 different high schools already with this program. But what was it in the program that really got you motivated and got you interested in getting more engaged?
Well, first let me tell you perhaps about how I found out about the program. So really interesting. I was already interested in leadership and in civic engagement a little bit before the academy. And a mentor of mine, who is the ex-superintendent of Flowing Wells, recommended it to me. And he's like, I think you should do it. I was like, okay.
So who is that? You can go ahead and say.
That's David Baker.
Yeah, David Baker was an incredible superintendent.
Yeah.
You know, as was John Petticone, who is still involved in the community. So Flowing Wells has been very blessed by the folks that you've come through that program. But David Baker was incredible. So
yes.
Continue.
Yeah, so he recommended the program to me. I was like, okay. Signed up for it, didn't think much of it. And I think it opened my eyes to leadership when it came to just knowing that courage gets you very far. I think prior to that, to the academy, I knew I was a leader, but I wasn't confident in who I was. And really, the academy focused on producing simple activities and developing basic professionalism for young students as well as young professionals going forward, and really teaching them the fundamentals on how to be service-based and how to focus on your community.
And it's more than just a little commitment. It was, you had 12 hours plus of leadership development at a leadership development retreat. You know, there was four class days that you had to participate, job shadowing, and it was a lot of career shadowing and career exposure. Now, one of the things that I found very interesting is you mentioned on your LinkedIn page that you, when you took the personality test, I think it was the Gallup Strength Finders assessment, and they had you take a couple, which is good. You learned something about you that wasn't at the top of your mind. Although once you took that personality test, you went, yeah, that is who I am. Can you kind of expand that?
So for those who don't know what the Strengths Finder is, it's essentially an assessment that organizes what type of leader you are into, I think it's five different personalities or traits, sort of. And the one that surprised me the most that I got was the initiator. I always thought of myself as a leader, as I said before, but I never really thought of myself as someone who started things. But just being able to see, oh, I got the initiator, showed me that I had potential courage that I wasn't taking advantage of at the time by not looking for opportunities to volunteer as well as other opportunities to participate in my community like I am doing with SALC now.
Well, and that I think was a start of a lot, because you've participated in a lot of different things. You've done several different internships, everything from the trip you took back to Washington, D.C.
Wonderful.
And I'm drawing a blank on them now. Of course, I should have written down. I was trying to get your LinkedIn page up. Lack of preparation sometimes. You've been engaged since then. And obviously, you know, you've been working with SALC for the last couple weeks. Since you took that program, has your vision of what you want to do in the future changed?
Most definitely. Prior to the program, I had somewhat of a selfish view on leadership. I didn't realize how oriented you had to be to not only the people that you serve, but to a higher purpose. This weekend, I just finished reading a great book called The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek.
I mean, I actually started that just about a month ago. So
wow, wonderful.
You're probably reading faster than I am.
So. Oh, I finished it. Yeah.
Well done.
And Simon Sinek, he discusses two topics. It very simple. He discusses companies having a finite mindset versus an infinite mindset, and he explains that these companies portray that they're the best, but really they're not the best, because they're in an infinite game. They're in a game that never ends. You can never win the stock market. You can never be the best company forever. And reading that book translates to my time at the academy, because I thought that I could win at leadership. You don't win at leadership. You're never at the top of a company, or even if you are, you have to serve the people below you. They matter so much, and I wish to iterate that as much as I can.
Well, on that respect, you're way ahead of your peers on understanding about that part of the game, but also about that part of leadership. And I think the other thing that the Strength Finders would probably teach you, it's taught you a little bit more about who you are. You have to be authentic to yourself. You can't be somebody you're not. And I see that in you. I think you are truly an authentic individual. So after you finish your senior year next year, what are your thoughts? What are your plans?
Well, it's a little complicated at the moment. So I spoke also with the prior superintendent, David Baker, right, as I was telling you. And I was telling him about my worries for a field that I wanted to go in. I wanted to be an investment banker. I think investment banking is very analytical. I think it's high positioned. I think it sets you up for the future. But I was just reading the Wall Street Journal 2 days ago, and they said that ChatGPT now has capabilities to replicate the job of a first year or second year analyst. So that industry is now dead. So I'm going to move on to hopefully apply to Georgetown, do something in politics potentially, or something still oriented in business, but perhaps not investment banking.
Well, I wouldn't give up on the investment banking, but I think to your point, everything I've known about you, you've talked about working in groups, you're working with others, leading, making others better as well. And investment banking, it is very analytical. And yes, ChatGPT is going to change, or AI in general is going to change how a lot of things are going to go. You're always going to need the human influence. I really believe that, especially when you're talking to people about how they're going to invest their money and what they're going to do with it. So don't rule that out. But I'll tell you, if I did was doing what I thought I was going to do when I was 18, my career and my life would have been totally different. So don't be afraid to give over that. So when we come back, I'm going to ask you one quick question, but I'll give you the break to think about it. And that is, what is your biggest takeaway from your time with working with Southern Arizona Leadership Council? So I'm Ted Maxwell. That's Francisco Holguin Hernandez, our SALC intern, and we'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice. Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, Matt Neely behind the glass. 5 days a week, five different hosts, five different points of view, little mix of politics and community and things in the region to do and some of the wonders of the university and Pima County. So I just finished and asked Francisco to stay on with me for another just quick question on, and it's Francisco Holguin Hernandez, a senior at Flowingwell High School, who has been through the Tucson Youth Leadership Academy, as well as is serving as a SALC intern for about the last 4 or 5 weeks. And it's been busy. We've changed your schedule on you a lot. We've moved you around, but we've been trying to expose you to all the things in the public policy world, in the political world, in the things that impact the quality of life for everyone in our region. So with a quick answer before I bring Jaime Malera on, what is your biggest takeaway from the time you've spent with SALC?
Most definitely, it has to be the value of just listening to people. What I've realized now, as I've gotten more exposed to leadership and business and other things in general, is listening goes a lot further than speaking when you're not supposed to. There are a lot of situations where I could say something, I could contribute, but perhaps it's more so about reading the room and being able to say, you know what, I'm going to shut down my opinion right now. Because maybe what this person has to say is valuable and worth contributing.
It's like you said on your LinkedIn page where you talk about what you believe about fairness and life simply isn't fair, but you say success has never been about fairness. Rather, it's about unlocking the right playbook. And I think that's a great line. It's unlocking the right playbook. And part of it's you have to listen. If you're always talking, it's much harder to influence somebody else, especially if they're always talking. So it works both ways. So Francisco, I've enjoyed the time with you at SALC, and I am very much looking forward to what your future holds, and I know we'll be in touch. But I appreciate your time. Appreciate you joining and sharing your story with some of our listeners.
Thank you, Ted.
Absolutely. This time I want to bring on Jaime Malera with Malera Alvarez. Jaime Malera is a founder and the partner in Malera Alvarez. They, full disclosure, they're SALC's lobbyist up in the state legislature. But Malera Alvarez has not only provided a lot of leadership at the legislative level and throughout the state, but they've really taken on a huge role with our relationships and our business growth and development with Mexico. And we're going to hit part of that. But first, Jaime, welcome to the show. I appreciate you always being a regular guest on The Morning Voice.
Well, Ted, good morning. It's always great to be on. And I just got to say, after listening to this young man, Francisco, very impressive. But unfortunately, he could never have a career in the legislature because he listens.
Well, let's say he couldn't have a career in today's legislature, Jaime. You know we're trying to change all that stuff. Let's say in today's legislature.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Matt and I were chatting. It's kind of fun because we can talk without the guests hearing us, and we were talking about what a breath of fresh air listening to this, and it gives us hope and promise in the future. So I appreciate all that Francisco's done. Real quick, before we go into the USMCA forum and forums, I should say, because you've held two already and you're going to be holding a third down in Tucson in early September. I want to get your feedback or your input on how you thought the legislative session ended and what you think it's going to look like for next year being an election year.
Well, you know, we had a number of opportunities to talk about the process of the legislative session, the budget, and I aired publicly my consternation about how they handled the budget process. I think that there's going to be some, because of what they did and some of the mechanisms that they used. For instance, when they decided to give members who voted for the budget that essentially pork, they allowed them to spend $5 million over the next 3 years on various projects. But a good way of doing state budgets. You really need to look at the major issues that the state needs to deal with, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's, you know, healthcare, education, of course, you know, it's a massive part of the budget. And it was very convenient and easy to parse out to the pork that each member would like to do. And unfortunately, I think next year, as they did a couple of years ago when they employed this process, they came back and they had to make drastic reductions. Well, I think the same thing's going to happen again. You still have some very significant strains on the budget that were not addressed. The other piece of this that people are starting to wake up to the fact that because of the federal changes in the big, beautiful bill that was passed recently, if Arizona wants to conform to that, meaning if we want to change our tax policies to mirror what the federal government did, in that, so for instance, if you want to take a deduction for tips and because they increased it, then it's going to be fairly significant. If the Joint Legislative Budget Committee came out with an estimate of close to $330 million if they were to make those tax conformity changes, which is normally fairly routine, that's just part of the process, it's going to be a big, big hit on the budget. So it's going to be a tough year next year, unfortunately.
Well, I think that's a great point. And, you know, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we had large surpluses of the state legislature, and the legislature was keeping that, you know, available with building up a rainy day fund, doing some other things. And now the last several years, they've used what you call the pork. And I'll tell you, from my role in the state transportation board, we had to face that because all of a sudden they were clawing back projects. They had basically, because they passed, we had to include on the five-year plan, and all of a sudden they weren't going to be funded by the state any longer. And that's a challenge. You mentioned already conformity. That's going to be a 300 plus million. The impact of the Medicaid and other cuts, that's going to fall on either we're going to have to cut the funding or the services here. But it seems to be something that they've relied upon year after year. How are they going to deal with that next year in an election year?
That's a great question, because that's the rub. Based on what happened this past year, which was, in my opinion, pretty disappointing, I think the governor, in a lot of ways, she worked very closely with the Senate and the Senate President Warren Peterson, which I never understood. That I thought it was, you know, you think of the term Stockholm Syndrome, when the captor becomes enamored with the person that took him hostage. Well, it felt like that was the case this time, because the Senate and the Senate President have been very obstinate towards the governor and her administration, blocking her director's appointments, literally suing her in court to not be able to do the kinds of things that governors are normally able to do. So that was interesting that she decided, well, I'm going to work with him and his team to craft a budget. Totally left out the House that was opposed to doing that pork type of distributions. So next year, I think it's going to be an interesting year. You have a governor that's going to be mired in her campaign. You have a president of the Senate that has indicated, well, he's announced he's running for attorney general. So he's going to be focused on other things. I think the speaker has already made some massive changes internally with his staff and reorganizing to, I think, not be considered an aside anymore in the budget. So it's going to be an interesting year. I think you're going to see a speaker with more experience and a better staff, and you're going to see two of the other leaders distracted. So it'll be an interesting year in how this plays out.
Yeah, I'm sure interesting's and definitely the statement that's going to happen. I mean, it's always an interesting year, especially for those of us who work up there. But I think next year is going to be pretty challenging based on what we'll be looking at the economy, the impact of all these cuts. And I'll be real interested to see how they go about getting to a budget and get on the campaign trail early. They'd like to adjourn early in election years, and I'm not sure that will happen. We saw how long it lasted this year.
I agree. I think we could be in for another long year.
So, I mean, real quick, if you can set the table on the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement as well. It was created on July 1st, 2020. We're hitting the five-year review for what was by all considered a pretty strong trade agreement. And Arizona played a big role in that agreement. But what all does this five-year review now require?
So in October, the U.S. Trade Representative essentially opens a docket where they look at all of the things that states, mainly governors, organize this business organizations, industries, really push for things that need to be included in the negotiations. And a good example is in Arizona. When 2020, the original USMCA got put in place, we were starting to build, although it was nascent at the time, our semiconductor industry. Well, as we've seen over the past short 5 years, that's really exploded in our state with existing organizations, with our Intel and our Oracles, and all of our Raytheons have really expanded and grown. You have TSMCA, for instance, has come into Arizona in a major way, and all around the semiconductor business. So now for Arizona, that becomes one of the pieces that we would like to see included in any kind of trade agreement that might be put together. So right now, we've been working with a number of organizations, including SALC, Greater Phoenix Leadership, Greater Phoenix Chamber, in trying to develop that structure that we need to start to give our elected officials the ammunition they need in order to make the case as to why we need to deal with these things in the hopefully the next upcoming agreement.
And Malera Alvarez has done quite a bit of work in this field working. You've led several business delegations down to Mexico City and other parts of Mexico, trying to enhance all the opportunities we have on this border. And can you discuss why you decided to run these USMCA forum events? You've had two, both of them up in Phoenix, and we're going to have the third one down here in Tucson. But what do you think the critical piece of that is?
I do want to talk about the Tucson event because I think that's very exciting. I think that's something that will wrap up this series. Long story short, the reason that we thought this was critical is because the organizations that we work with, like I said, with SALCA, Greater Phoenix Leadership, the Phoenix Chambers, they understand that if you're not prepared, then you're going to be beholden to mega states like California and Texas. And so we do need to make sure that we have our act together, that we talk about the things that are important specifically to the state of Arizona. So for instance, the one big issue, Ted, is I know SALC has been on the forefront of talking about how significant and impactful this is. And if it's not reversed, it could be incredibly harmful to Arizona, is what the Trump administration did with this tomato tariff. They increased tomato tariffs by 17%. And if it's not addressed fairly soon, that's massively impactful to Southern Arizona. I grew up on the border of Nogales, and that's the lifeblood of that economy is the input of agricultural. products, and tomatoes, of course, dominate everything. So those are the kinds of things as to why Arizona needs to be prepared. We need to have our act together and be organized, because I assure you other states are doing the exact same thing. And if we're not ready, then we get left behind.
That's the voice of Jaime Molera with Molera Alvarez. He's been discussing the USMCA forums that are coming up, and we're going to talk after the break about specifically what's been talked about, but more importantly, what's going to happen in Tucson here in a couple weeks. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. And Matt, I think that's kind of the greenest I've seen the traffic report in the major city center portion of the region. So hopefully if you're listening, your traffic flow is going well. If you're in one of those few spots where there is some congestion, please stay with us, and hopefully we're keeping making it a little easier and not just letting you get frustrated with the traffic you're facing. So I've got Jaime Molera with Molera Alvarez on the line. We've been talking about the USMCA forms, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement forms, that are set up to get Arizona's advocacy and points they need to be made for when they open the review of this important trade agreement that we've got. So, Jaime, you've already held two in Phoenix. Do you want to talk shortly about those and before we get on to the Tucson event?
Yes. Starting this late spring, we held our first couple of events in really looking at the impact specifically for Arizona and bringing in both Mexican and legislative and business officials, Arizona legislative and business officials, of course, to really examine why we need to start working together to make sure that we have a unified voice on why this is important. And the first two forums were absolutely fantastic. We think that not just from the attendance, but also from the coverage that we received and the understanding of what we need to start to do. We're excited about Tucson because in the last event, one of our speakers was Mayor Romero, the mayor of Tucson, Regina Romero. And she did a phenomenal job of recognizing why this is important, why there needs to be that collaboration with business and industry to work together to, as I said, put together a strong game plan for our state and for our region. And so immediately afterwards, to her credit, she talked about how we could do this in Tucson. And again, with everything going on, the tomato tariff, then it really is relevant for us to have this kind of a discussion in Tucson and the Southern Arizona area. That would be very timely. And we think with a lot of the folks in the Tucson area that can add really incredible insight and information, we think we can have a very powerful conversation.
So my understanding, Jaime, this event will be held in the second week in September. I don't know if you've ironed out the exact date, but the second week in September.
I believe it's September 10th.
Okay.
I believe it's September 10th.
September 10th. That's great to know. And breaking news here on The Morning Voice. So what do you see being the big issues or discussions that you're going to be looking for community members, business leaders, others, community leaders to show up, maybe some of our young, up-and-rising vocal members of this community? What are the topics you think we need to be prepared to talk about?
Well, certainly I just mentioned at length the agricultural issues. I think that's first and foremost some of the things that we need to be actively working on. Republicans and Democrats, it's interesting. That's one of the few things, and I was on another show recently talking about, this is the first time I've seen Andy Biggs, who's a candidate for governor of Arizona on the Republican side, who's a current congressman, very hardcore Trump supporter, MAGA member, and Katie Hobbs, our governor, both agree on something. And they said that this is we cannot have this happen. So those are the kinds of things, Ted, I think if we can start to identify areas of interest that are important for the region and for the entire state, then I think it'd be very fruitful. And that's what we did the first two sessions. And I'm confident that this third session in Tucson will give us that kind of feedback that will allow us to, you know, take it to the relevant or pertinent policy leaders to say, these are some of the things that we really need to focus on.
Well, Jaime, we've got about 30 seconds left. Can you give me your feelings on your confidence level on the USMCA and what it will look like on the after all the review is done?
Well, I've always been an optimist, Ted, and I think because of the impact it has, not just for our state and the West Coast, but for the United States, our biggest partner is Mexico, and Canada certainly is right up there. As you know, there are friends and neighbors, so it's not only smart economically, it's smart strategically, it's smart militarily. And for the North American region, for us to be together lockstep, that really has an important and positive impact.
So Jaime,
I'm looking forward to getting this done.
We look forward to having you down here. Appreciate your time with us as always and look forward to having you back. Good morning and welcome back. This is the second hour of the Engagement Hour on The Morning Voice. Every Tuesday, we're here to try to encourage you to get involved. We've had a good conversation thus far this morning, everything ranging from some of our youth in the community that are looking to get more engaged and involved, all the way to talking about the importance of the USMCA and in the trade agreement that's going to be reviewed this year. And it's a huge impact on Southern Arizona. There's no doubt about that. So we appreciate Jaime Molera for joining us as well. So as we all know, there's City of Tucson elections, right, Matt? They're coming up.
Indeed.
They are.
It's election palooza. For an odd numbered year, we've got council elections, congressional election. It's a special election, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, we all know that how CD7 turned out.
Surprised they didn't throw a bond election in there like in July for us or something.
Yeah. Oh, they may not have one in July, but there's probably going to be an override one in November. So there's more.
Yeah.
There will be more on normally.
And hopefully for you, an RTA election. So
we'll wait till November, but
in a few, you know.
If it's not March, you're going to have one
a lot of elections.
Unhappy host.
Yeah.
So we'll see. The rhetoric may get kicked up if that doesn't happen. But bottom line is, we do have the City of Tucson elections coming up. Matter of fact, you've probably already, you're voter in the City of Tucson, you have received your primary ballot, and I strongly suggest everyone to fill one out and send it in. I think the most important right and responsibility we have in this country is that to vote. There's no reason you shouldn't vote. And if you look at the CD7 results, which were kind of shocking, it was only shocking by the margin of victory that Adelita Grijalva won by. I believe everybody believed that she was more than likely going to be the winner, but it was a significant beating. And what always amazed me, and Francisco, this is something for you to take away with, is the biggest, as always, the majority of the voters by a long way are older than 50 years old. The youth that gathered around Deja Fox's campaign and were showing up, and they didn't turn out. They just didn't vote.
I see. So you're already seeing in the exit surveys that the demographic of the voter was older.
The demographic of the voter was absolutely older, and it's always shifted that way. And every year you say, I keep trying to talk with the younger generations that your biggest power you've got is your vote.
So Deja Fox running all the TV ads, she really should have been concentrating on online ads where the demographic she wanted to reach was probably located.
You've got a future in campaign strategy.
Thank you very much.
So there you go. All right. Well, we've had Leighton Rockefeller Jr. on, who was the Democratic. He's running as a Democratic candidate and is facing a primary right now in Ward 6. And he's been on our show, and I've mentioned that I believe his values align closer with those of me personally, as well as the organization. But today, we've got the honor, and I appreciate Jay coming in today, especially after the morning you've had. I know, appreciate you're here, Jay Tolkoff. He is also running in the Ward 6 primary, but there's a little bit of difference for you versus what some of your opponents are facing. And do you want to talk about that real quick?
Well,
and welcome to the show, by the way,
good
Jay.
Good morning, I was going to say.
Yeah, good morning.
Thanks for having me here. You know, to be the comical guy that I try to be. I would say the biggest difference is age. But I like to equate that with wisdom, if that's okay. The reality is that I am the sole Republican running in Ward 6. A lot of people have said I'm out of my mind to do it and that I don't stand a chance. But the more and more I'm out there, the more and more I think I really do have a chance.
And the last time that a Republican won a election in the city of Tucson was in Ward 6.
It's happened twice in 20 years. You know, you had Fred and then you had Steve, who was a Republican at the time. And so it does happen and it can happen.
Well, Fred was actually more than 20 years ago.
So. Was it really?
He was back in the 90s.
Oh, good grief.
Time flies, doesn't it?
That it does. So Jay, I think one of the, like you said, you do have a lot of humor in your answers, even when you're as part of the panels or the debates. And one of the best ones I've always liked is when they talk about if you're on the general election and they go around the room and you say, at some point in the every single one of them, you say, well, there's one thing that I know for sure. I will be part of the general election. So before we go down that path and before we get to the issues and talk about why you're running, let's, if you could, give our listeners a background. Who is Jay Tolkoff?
Well, I've done a lot of talks, and a lot of times when people are introducing themselves, they start out by saying, I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself, and I don't have enough time in this hour to tell you a little bit about myself. I've had a very, very complicated life, done a lot of different things, have a lot of experiences, and kind of it started out, I had a purpose when I was a young person. I was heavily driven to play music. And normally in the school district where I grew up, you were allowed to start doing that when you were about 10 or 11. And I harassed my parents enough so that they rented a trumpet for me when I was 8.
But you must have parents that love you.
I didn't like to practice, so they were okay with that. But I actually was pretty good at it and started blowing taps for an American Legion post on the color guard line. When I was 11, I got invited to play in Arlington, and I was about, I think, 13 or 14, and my parents said, no, you're not going to Arlington by yourself.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's an incredible experience.
It would have been, yeah. But I did that up until the time I came out here to go to school when I was 20. I had my first paying gig when I was 12. My music teacher from school, he had me sit in with his band. And then I wound up playing with a 20-piece jazz ensemble. And we used to go out and play all kinds of different community-based things. And it was a union job, and, you know, 12, 13 years old. And, of course, got into the rock and roll scene.
At 12 and 13 years old, you were a member of a union?
I actually did not join. They were not too fond about the idea of a 12-year-old being in the music union.
I was going to ask that, too.
Yeah. I wasn't too fond about paying the dues, either, because I only did it, you know, a couple times a year. And I think I made $35 for 2 hours, which was good money back then.
Oh, that was.
And I did the rock and roll thing, and really was heavy. By the time I stopped playing music, it could pretty much play every instrument except woodwinds. Yeah. And, that was my drive. I actually when I graduated from high school, I had a lot of prestigious schools, you know, ask me to come to those schools, but they were really expensive. And my dad grew up in the Depression, and he said, I put myself through school, so you can put yourself through school. And I thought a really good option would be one of the military academies. And I got my appointment to the Naval Academy. And unfortunately, I failed the eye test, and they wouldn't let me fly. And they said, we can put you in a submarine. And I didn't think that sounded very good at all. So I passed. And I actually went to work at United Parcel Service as a Teamster, unloading tractor trailers, and then enrolled in a community college back east. Finished about 2 years of college and in about 9 months. And then it was inexpensive at the University of Arizona, and I had friends that were out here. It was a long way from New Jersey, and it wasn't California. So I came here for what was going to be a 2-year stint to finish my degrees in music theory and composition and electronics. And when I got here, the university said, no, that doesn't work. You got to pick one or the other. So I went for electrical engineering and, did my school thing, paying my way through school. I had three jobs, took a lot of credits. Between junior and senior year, had an unfortunate interaction with a couple vehicles and got my arm smashed. And I was working at what is now Centennial Hall as a theater assistant. And that job was very physical, setting up equipment, pushing people off stages as they were trying to get on. We did a lot of concerts back then. And when I got out of the hospital in August of 79, I literally didn't know how I was going to pay my rent in September. And one of my roommates ordered a pizza from a new place in town called Domino's. And I had a $100 Ford van, and I thought, gee, I could probably deliver pizzas. Went down, filled out an application, started on August 6, 1979, as probably about the fourth employee in the state. And halfway through my fall semester, I was given the opportunity to train to open up the second store in the state, which was at Alvernon and Speedway. It's now long gone.
So the first two Domino's pizzas in Arizona both were in Tucson.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought, when they offered me that, I said, come on, I'm a senior in electrical engineering. I had a job lined up making decent money. And I thought, this might be fun for a change. So I did it, and I did manage that first store. And then about 5 months later, I opened up the one at 29th and Krakow for Davis Monthan. So that was my second store. And things were going well. I was making $13,000 a year. I thought I was rich. And I had bought a house, and it was a triplex. And then the realtor who got me into that house asked me if I wanted to partner with him on a house down on the south side. So got into a second house, and I was like, well, this is working out okay. I'll do this for another year. Well, that kept going for 14 years, and I left the company after a change of ownership as the acting president of the company with 400 people working for me and in charge of just about every aspect of a business that you can be in charge of.
So a big part of this is what I tell people all the time. You never know why you're in a place, but it's the place you're meant to be at the time.
Yeah. I have always, I've kind of described my life as being kind of like something floating in the ocean. You see where the current takes you and make the best of it.
Well, so I believe there's a lot more to your story, like you said, and I want to be able to get you to the, mm-hmm. to the point where we talk about some issues on this too. I know you did use your electrical education later in your career with another job and another line of work, PJ Subs, a well-known establishment here in Tucson. That also was your operation, am I correct?
Yeah. When I left Domino's, the electrical contractor that we used to build all the stores for the 14 years I was there called me up one day. He was a buddy of mine and asked me if I would help him out. And he convinced me, I'm not going to go into the details, but he convinced me to go to work for him. And that led to me being a general contractor for 10 years. And, that went well too. I would probably be still doing it, except when I was 46, I had tore both my rotator cuffs. And the doctor said, you're getting a little old to be doing this young person's work. And so PJ Subs came into being. And it was just, okay, another opportunity is I partnered up with East Coast Super Subs at first. And then there were some discrepancies going on. But so we parted ways amicably. And as a matter of fact, I'm helping the guy who started East Coast Subs open a new place now. And so we'll see where that goes. But, everything keeps changing.
So you've had an amazing life on so many different avenues, from your musical career early to the others. Real quick, why did you decide to take this step and run for public office?
Well, I've been in Tucson for almost 50 years now. And I've watched a terrific community kind of go in the wrong direction. I think it's, we like to talk about evidence-based solutions. Well, if you look at the evidence out there, but you just have to open your eyes and you can say, things are not doing well here. I've got a track record of solving problems. And I've got a different set of skills than currently what is represented on the city council. And I think we all know that a team works better than individuals. But when you have no diversity of thought on the council and everybody's voting 6-1, 7-0, it tells you that we need to change it up. And the results are not there. And the other thing is, in business, you know, I know what a budget is, and I know how to squeeze every dollar out of a budget. And our city council seems to be confusing spending with investment. The way they use the word investment is kind of like if a guy was to come home and say to his wife, I noticed there was an extra $1,000 in the checking account. I'm going to go down to the store and invest in a new set of golf clubs. I see that kind of stuff happening all the time. I also see us spending way too much money on projects that should be significantly less. And I think it's inexperience that has people making those decisions that wind up costing us so much money.
Well, Jay, I couldn't have set up the next segment any better. So when we come back after the break, we'll continue our conversation with Jay Tolkoff, Republican candidate for Ward 6 in the city of Tucson. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Jay Tolkoff, Republican candidate for Ward 6, the city of Tucson council, is our guest. So before we go to some of those follow-ups, Jay, bump in, lead in, lead out music for the rest of the show. Who would we talked about your mutual career. Who would you want to hear Matt Neely pull up for you for some music on?
Wow, that's like asking me what kind of tree would I like to be. it's a really wide variety. I mean, I played in that jazz ensemble, we played big band music from the 40s, which was fun. I remember. I have my mom's 78 record collection of Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller, and you know that stuff's great music. But I grew up with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and
now you're talking.
Then when I was in high school, my band was pretty progressive. We played a lot of jazz and Chick Corea, jazz fusion stuff. So it really depends on the mood. In the morning, I'm usually sleeping, so I wouldn't know what I would music.
We'll leave it up to Matt. Matt's got some ideas there. We'll go with that. So let's go back to one of the things that it's something that I've vocally said for the last 7 years in front of the city council is totally on board with diversity. And I think that if you look at the council's makeup now, you've got a lot of diversity being represented on that council, except for one. And that's the diversity of thought. And it's the diversity of thought that if you only are in an echo chamber, you're not going to make the decisions that are going to make the move. So what are some of the diversity of thought items that you will bring to this council if you get elected?
Well, it's not just diversity of thought. I bring in a skill set. The council depends heavily on staff recommendations and expert research. But if you're not well enough versed in a lot of different areas, you don't know the right questions to ask. So staff recommendations become like, well, maybe we should do this because they know what they're talking about. I'm the type of person that plays devil's advocate really, really well. The other thing about diversity of thought is that I'm about getting things done. And, you know, the RTA is a pretty good example of how the city of Tucson shoots himself in the foot by delaying because they need to get more input. You know, at some point, you just kind of have to make a decision and go with it. I'm good at getting out. You don't have to have 99% of the information to make a good decision. A lot of times you can get 50 to 60% see the writing on the wall and say, this is the way we're going to go. And of course, you know, you need to listen to the community, but you can't make everybody happy. But if you delay it a really, really long time, you make everybody unhappy. And I think that's where we're at right now. I also think that our city council is kind of they're living in a kind of a la-la land. They're not acknowledging the reality of what's going on. I heard the mayor on a clip on the news say that she got a report that homelessness is down, and the count that they just did in the winter shows just the opposite. So how do you get that number? I don't know. It's like, if you deny reality, you can't make good decisions. The other thing about diversity of thought is I'm much more concerned about, rather than giving lots of money to people, I'm more about having people being able to stand up on their own. And we don't have very good fertile soil here in order for people to reach their full potential in life or economically, for sure. You know, we've developed a service economy here that, you know, it has its limits. I was really lucky that I got into the ground floor of an operation that took off. And, you know, when I started with Domino's, there was less than 180 stores in the world. And when I left, there were 5,000. So, you know, I was lucky that way. And I don't, but, you know, we should be able to have industries in town that support people that are graduating from the University of Arizona with degrees so that they can use those degrees rather than leaving and going someplace else and, you know, having nothing but minimum wage and a little bit above minimum wage jobs and union jobs. We should have plenty of executives working in this town, and I think we need to drive that way.
Well, job creation is a big factor. What do you think that City of Tucson needs to do to change this attitude that City of Tucson's closed for business?
Well, for some reason, it just seems like there's this attitude that business is bad. You know, businesses are an essential part of the community. I was just talking to one of the guys that's involved with Commoner and Company. A well-known restaurant on the northeast side, and they're not closing because they don't want to be in business anymore. They're closing to go to Gilbert because the opportunities are better there. You know, I think what we need to do is make it a place where people are not afraid of business and look at them like, well, we need to just take more money from the businesses. You know, I can tell you, as a small sub shop owner, it was a tough go. It was really, I mean, I did it for 18 years, I think, but, you know, I didn't get rich off of it. And a lot of people think, you're in business, you own a company, you must be doing well. That's not the case. People don't close their businesses down because they're tired of making money. They're tired of losing money. And we need to do more to make sure the business community can thrive here.
That's the voice of Jay Tolkoff, Republican candidate for Ward 6, City of Tucson. Stay with us after the break. We'll hear more from Jay. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely behind the glass, playing a little bit more jazz and some just funny during, right after Jay said what he'd want to do, you could hear the music a little bit from behind the glasses. Matt was going through, and all of a sudden Jay in the middle of the interview spins around. It's just giving him two thumbs up on that song that took us out of the bottom of the hour. So, Jay, we've talked a lot about the economic development, what you think needs to be done there, and obviously poverty is an issue in Tucson, so that's a big thing. But I want to turn this, I'm going to go to Francisco, for those of you who are with me, the first part, Francisco Holguin Hernandez, the current intern at SALC and a future budding leader in his own right. I'm going to let Francisco ask you one question before we go.
Yeah, so Jay, I've had the fortunate opportunity of being an intern here at SALC, and with that comes the privilege of being able to visit all the general election candidate ward forums with the League of Women Voters. And so I just wanted to know your pitch. When you went to the Martha Cooper Public Library, what was your opinion? What were your general takeaways from the League of Women Voters? What were your general sentiments?
Well, first of all, I thought it was very well done in terms of professionalism, the way they had their audio set up, the way they recorded it visually. They did a pretty good job. I was struck by the diminutive size of the room, because I had happened to be at a meeting for NA, Narcotics Anonymous, for a friend of mine who just hit his 5-year clean and sober. And I'd never been in that environment before, and I was just amazed by the passion and the camaraderie and the just the general concern that they had. And I thought, you know, God, wouldn't it be great if we could bring that to the constituency? And then I walk into this library where, you know, Ward 6 represents 90,000 people, and the room couldn't have held more than 100 people. And it's like, gosh, this should be at McHale Center if people actually cared. That was the first thing that hit me. As I had told you earlier, I was a little put off because they changed the amount of time that we had for an answer. And it's hard to really tell people what you think in 60 seconds. The questions, they came from the audience. They were reasonable. The one question that I thought was out of line was, what was our stance on Project Blue? And they preface it by saying, you know, there's not a lot of information. And it's like, well, I don't have any more information than you do, but I think that along the lines of economic development, you know, you can bring clean industry into the town and, you know, keep everybody happy. And the engineering, there are ways to solve the problems with water, and there's ways to solve the problems with the electricity. But, you know, everybody's got they're all in alarm because they're going to use all our water and they're going to use all our electricity. And it's just not the case. But the simple fact is that we've got people in office that should be making those decisions. The biggest takeaway that really, really bothered me was when I left, I went up to the chair of the league and asked her, I said, you know, so what do you plan to do after the primaries are over and we know what the general election is going to look at? And she said, we really don't plan on doing anything, which says to me that they kind of believe that once the primaries are over, the election's over. And that's kind of the attitude in Tucson, is that the Democrats going to win. And, you know, I said at that event that unfortunately people are going to look and see an R next to my name, and they're just going to say, I'm not going to vote for that guy because he's a Republican. And you know, my line is, I don't have Republican values. I don't have Democrat values. I have Tucson values. I've been here long enough. I've been here longer than some of the people I'm running against have been alive. And, you know, I just think that we need to stop looking at a letter next to a name. Incidentally, we are the last city in Arizona to have partisan elections on a local level. They're not that way in Scottsdale. They're not that way in Mesa. They're not that way in Phoenix. It's just like the school boards are. And we all kind of share the same thing. We want to have safe communities and decent roads and parks that we can use and good culture and people and businesses that are thriving so that our people can thrive. I think we all want that. You know, so I'm not a really horrible, you know, sleeping with the devil kind of Republican guy.
So in a twist of fate, you know, Jim Senex, who's also running in Ward 6, I've mentioned, you know, Miranda Schubert before, and so I mentioned Jim too. One of his big things is getting rid of the general election at large.
Mm-hmm.
SLC has always been a long supporter of ward-only elections in the city of Tucson. The person who gets the most votes inside their ward is not always the person that gets elected, because the entire population, a.k.a. people outside the ward, get to tell you who's going to represent you. But that's what gives you an opportunity in this race. Because in Ward 6, to win the Ward 6 straight up, it'd be a little more difficult. 50%, nearly 50% of the voters in Ward 6 are Democrat.
Yeah, I think the number is like 24,000 versus 8,000 Republicans.
Exactly. It's just over 8,000 out of 48 total.
Yeah.
So, but now when you get to the general election, you're going to have the opportunity to appeal to the city at large.
Yeah, and actually the largest group of voters is out in Ward 4, and that has the largest group of Republicans also. So, you know, clearly, well, here's what it comes down to, Ted. In order to win, if everything is just normal, in order to win, I need to get 15,000 votes that I wouldn't get otherwise. So you can either get 15,000 Republicans who don't vote or independents to swing your way, or you can get Democrats to switch their vote from Democrat over to Republican, and then you only need 7,500 of them. And I will tell you that I've had many well-known Democrats that are saying, Jay, we support you. We can't come out and endorse you, because it would be suicide for them. But we're supporting you. And, you know, I speak to the Democrats in a lot of ways.
I think Prop 414's results showed a little bit of that concern from it went down on and by the independents, the Republicans, and the Democrats. So it went down throughout. So there's some opportunity, I think, here. Where can people go to learn more about you and your priorities?
Well, you know, I have a website that it's Tolkoff4Tucson.com, and it's the number 4 because Tolkoff 4 spelled out, there were just too many F and F's. You know, there are some priorities out there. There's a little bio about me. Long story short is my campaign number is 520-305-6591, and I tend to answer that phone. You know, people want to learn more about, they can talk to me.
Can you give that number one more time?
Sure.
Not that you want to be inundated with calls, but one more time on that.
520-305-6591.
Okay, that's the number you can get directly a hold of Jay. He's willing to talk to you. And then Tolkoff, the number 4Tucson.com. You can see more about him. So you truly are a Tucsonan. You love Tucson. You've lived here. You've worked here. You've made a living here. You're not going anywhere. And one of the top, actually the first priority you have listed is preserving our environment and the places we call home.
Right.
You want to expand on that at all?
Sure. I live in a mud adobe house. It was built many, many, many years ago. It was the first house in the section of town that I live in. And when I bought it, this was back in the 80s, I went to the city and this is engineering. I went to the city and said, hey, I'd like to put a gray water system in because the restrooms were all on one side of the house and the kitchen and the laundry room was on the other side of the house. And it's like, it'd be really easy to split it out. And they laughed at me.
And can you explain what gray water is for those who might not understand?
That's using water that's comes out of your kitchens and out of your laundries for irrigation purposes, so that, you know, it doesn't have human excrement.
Correct.
They laughed at me, and I like, what's, you know, and they said it'll cost you $30,000 to get it through the state DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality. Nobody does that. And I said, but we live in the desert. Why aren't we doing that? Well, now we are. My house, I put a big addition on it, and it's got a tall ceiling. And I put radiant heat in the floor by circulating water up to the roof and in a solar collector, and it heats the concrete so that in the wintertime, the floor is nice and warm. And you know, I believe in doing things like that. I like to camp, and I like going out and looking at nature. But, people say they're environmentalists, and we care about the environment. But the environment is also, if you're in your bedroom, that's your environment. If I'm in the studio, and this is my immediate environment, and if you look around Tucson, we're not doing a very good job of taking care of our environment here. We may be caring about climate change and clean water and all that, but if you look at our washes, which are a gateway to the aquifer, they're full of trash and who knows what else. If you look at the streets, they're dirty, they're not maintained well. When people come to town to visit, they're like friends of mine that went to school here that moved away, they're like, God, what happened to Tucson? And it's like, I think we need to take care of our immediate environment and not just the world environment.
That's the voice of Jay Tolkoff, candidate for Ward 6. Your second priority that you have listed is true public safety versus everybody. I mean, very few people are going to tell you they don't want public safety. They don't want education. Nobody's going to say that on the campaign trail. But you're defining the difference when you say true public safety. What's that mean to you?
Well, I think... When I was a kid growing up, you know, like in first grade, second grade, we were taught, if you're in trouble, go see a police officer, and they will help you. And, you know, my experience with the police is, you know, being in business and having over 10,000 employees in my lifetime, most of my experiences with the police department were, they were there to help us out. Unfortunately, because we've let the staffing drop so much, they're basically dealing with crises all the time, and they don't have the time to go out and do the things that one would consider helpful. I mean, anybody who's ever been burglarized knows the experience there, you know. And, you know, a lot of times you just want somebody to say, it'll be all right. And nowadays they say, well, you've got insurance, don't you? And it's like, wow, that's a great response. One of my stories was I was driving home, I don't know, 6 months ago, about 11 o'clock at night, and I saw something in the road, and I thought it was like a bag of garbage or something. But it turned out to be a guy who was skateboarding down the street on one of those little motorized skateboards, and he fell off, and he was unconscious, had a head wound. And I called 911, and after like 20 minutes, I was disconnected, and then somebody called me back at about 45 minutes out. By that time, he had regained consciousness, but, you know, he was taken away in an ambulance. That can't be. You know, that's a priority that the city needs to take care of. So I think we need to reestablish trust in our first responders, and I really think that we need to make sure that they have the financial resources to do their jobs the way it was intended.
So, Jay, as we close out, what have you not had the opportunity to say that you want to say to the listeners?
Well, I have been holding off on campaigning because I didn't really see the sense of spending a lot of effort to win an election that I know I'm going to win. One thing that we're doing right now is we're trying to amass an army of between 50 to 100 people, 25 years or younger, that are like-minded to go out and you know, do literature drops and things like that. So anybody out there who's listening that has access to 5 or 10 people that are, you know, that are young and maybe interested in helping our community out, they need to reach out to me. My email address is simple. It's my initials, JT, the number 4, Ward, the number 6, at gmail.com. And you know, I answer all of them, and just recently we've gotten a handful of volunteers that are 18, 19 years old, and they're tonight we're going out and dropping a bunch of signs. You know, there's so much to talk about, and it's just all I can say is that if you want to get to know me, you know, come to one of the events, call me, send me an email. I offer a lot.
Well, that's Jay Tolkoff. He's given you 3 different ways to learn more about him, 2 direct ways to get in touch with him, both his Gmail address and his phone number. And Jay, I know we're going to want to get you back. You know, your opponent will be decided here in a couple weeks, and then the true campaign, unfortunately, our campaigns have become year-long, but the true campaign begins then, as you can start differentiating yourself between the other person that the citizens have an opportunity to vote for.
Indeed. Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
I appreciate it. Look forward to you coming back on with us again. Stay with us. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030, The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Matt Neely's behind the glass. So, Matt, we saved this time to talk about an issue. First, I want to remind everybody to listen in tomorrow. Ed Ackerley will be sitting in for Grant Krueger on Food for Thought.
I neglected to get that to you. Alan Kaith will be sitting in for
Grant. Oh, Alan Kaith will be sitting in for Grant.
Yes, he will be.
Okay, I know Ed sat
and
in for him last week.
I know what they're talking about, but I neglected in all the fun listening to Jay. I neglected my job one, which was to tell you who was going to be on. Yikes.
We'll figure it out. Hey, trust me, it'll be good talk. It'll be good radio. Food for Thought Wednesdays are always full of politics and other discussions.
I believe he's going to be speaking with about ADOT, local transportation issues.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to listen to that one, obviously, as I always do for Grant's show.
I think Michael Ortega might be on. I think.
Well, that'd be great. Michael Ortega stepped in, made a big difference. But when I reached out to Matt yesterday, he said, hey, we got some issues we want to talk about. A couple weeks ago when I had Police Chief Chad Kazmar on, he pointed out that only about 50% of the fentanyl arrests made by the city of Tucson are actually charged. And there's an issue that's gotten less attention than I thought it would be. Matter of fact, KOLD is the only person that's done an article on it or a coverage on it. And that is the Good Samaritan who was murdered after 11:30 at night, where somebody knocked on his door and said, "Hey, we've got car problems.
They live on Christmas Eve
on the remote on the east side. You know, can you help us out?" And he jumped in his truck, took the person back out there to help fix his car, supposedly, and he was violently murdered. His body was desecrated, and they eventually the car that was they were needing to fix was torched, but they stole his car, and eventually three people were arrested.
That's right.
In that the wife of
Christina Clifford, so Paul Clifford's the victim's name, and they arrested about 6 days, I think on the 30th of December, so about 6 days after he was murdered, they arrested these three holed up in some sort of mobile home park on the south side. So they had evaded capture. Oh boy, we're going to run out of time, but they've evaded capture for several days. Anyway, the widow, Christina Clifford, has said that the county attorney is going to make a plea deal with the two younger of the three. One will get probation only, and one will get 1 year in prison only.
And the thing that I wanted to hit on, though, is the lack of press coverage. It's like I said, KOLD covered it.
She took to Facebook on Saturday over the weekend, one day over the weekend, and they 4 and 13 did pick up the story yesterday. And judging by as distraught as the widow was, she was totally not on board with the county attorney's decision.
Absolutely, as you'd expect. There's no doubt about that.
And so I'm sure the argument's going to be made, oh, they're young, they didn't know what they were doing. You're an accomplice to murder. If your buddy goes to rob a bank and you're the getaway driver and your buddy decides on the fly to shoot somebody and somebody dies, you are now an accessory to murder. Unfortunately, that's just the way it works.
So leave that thought. We should have more information on that situation for next week. You've been listening to 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. And thank you for joining us on The Morning Voice today. Talk to you next week.